Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Hey, how are you? Hope you're having a great holiday season. Welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast, episode 191. This is Brett Horowitz.
And this is Andrew Horowitz, and welcome aboard. That's my son. He just turned 15 just about a month and a half ago, so I thought it would be great to have him come into the studio and spend some time here. He's been here before, but he's got more of an interest in some of the audio and production side of things, and hopefully we'll get him a little bit more interested in the investing side of things. Already he's been, he knows a bit about it. He knows, of course, like every other 15-year-old, about Apple and how great they are and that they are taking over the world. And he knows surely about shopping, don't you, buddy?
Yeah.
Anyway, so we got lots to talk about bringing him in on the conversation. I think it's really a wonderful thing to really think about this time of year to really maybe notch up the educational process, to pass on the information and knowledge that you have to your children. And hopefully this will spark some interest maybe for some of your kids to maybe even pick up a podcast or two that talk about investing, or maybe start reading maybe just a small part or watching a small part of the investing world and the things that are happening outside of maybe just, you know, the things that they do. Open up the horizon a little bit. Lots of things happening in the world before we get to that, though. We have PIMCO is now raising the GDP guidance upwards of almost 1% from where they thought it was be. We'll get to that in a second. Interesting. We also have some good things happening in the economics around the world. We have some concerns still out of Europe. We have the IBD home study course that I'm reviewing. And as a matter of fact, just to quickly get you there, next week, Scott O'Neill is going to be our guest talking about MarketSmith and this. If you want to learn about investing, I'm going to talk about that today, talk about some of the things that they have to offer. What a great home study tool that you can use. And then also we have China inflation, we have jobs and taxes, questioning whether the Santa rally is going to end or continue on. And I want to have a little discussion about Bernanke. Is Bernanke a bozo or is he a genius? A lot of guys call him a clown and don't know what they're doing. A lot of concern around the world about inflation due to the amount of stimulus they're pumping into the economy. And right now it looks like, in my opinion, he could have done the greatest magic trick of all time of the Fed. And I'm going to talk about that. But before we do it, I thought, you know, I wanted to talk about, Brett, you started driving, what, a month and a half ago, right?
Yeah, 2 months ago, something like that.
It's fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So down here in Florida at 15, you get these little guys down on the road doing their permits. We're driving around and all that. And I kind of wanted to talk to you about the whole thing about, you know, you're still not driving on your own. And of course, putting aside the whole idea of autopilot through GPS, okay, which everybody can do right now and almost every car is equipped with, I want to talk to you about driving and directions. So here's what I want to set up. So there you are, you're in the car, you have directions on where you're supposed to go to. You're going down the street, you're following your rights, you're following your lefts, and all of a sudden, you make a wrong turn. You got the picture?
You understand what I'm saying? Okay. I understand.
Okay, so now you make a wrong turn. What are the choices you have? What can you do? You can continue on, and what would happen then?
You either can take your chances by maybe taking a shortcut and getting there, or you could just completely get lost.
Right. So a lot of shortcuts maybe will work, maybe will not. It's kind of like hoping to God you can get to where you're going somehow magically. Again, we don't have the GPS throwing us the autopilot. You're going to get lost. Or what happens maybe if you turn down like a one-way street? What would happen then?
I mean, you can either crash or you can reach a dead end.
Or you can kind of do one of those things like they do in the movies where the guy's swerving in and out of every car and never getting hit.
007.
Exactly. So, you know what? I wanted to talk about this because I think there's some interesting parallels to the whole idea of that and the world of investing, especially right now. I think it's time at the end of the year to spend a little bit of your time looking back into the mistakes you did and that you had, the errors you made over the last year, and maybe some of the things that you did right as well put them into perspective so that you can carry them out moving forward, not only next year, but in the years ahead. So let's go back to the whole driving discussion we have. So if you make a wrong turn, one of the other things you could do is you could stop, turn around. We didn't talk about that, right? You could stop and turn around, and you could try to get back on track. You can learn from your mistakes in a way.
Yeah, I mean, but if you try, you don't know if you're going to turn around.
Yeah, you don't know. Who knows what's going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. But here's what I'm saying. So now let's equate this to the stock market for a second. So you buy a stock, and you think all the signals are right, the directions are right, it's doing the right thing fundamentally, it's doing the right thing technically, you see the chart looks good, and then all of a sudden, it's not going where you want it to go. So you have the same kind of choices, I think, right? The first choice was that you could try a shortcut. Hopefully, you're going to get to the right place by maybe either buying more of it or because of it dips or whatever. Or, on the other hand, what you can do is you may get lost. In other words, the stock may continue down and you don't know really what's happening. You've lost control of the situation. And again, there's really no answer. On the other hand, if you're going down like a one-way street, mm-hmm. One of the things you said is you can crash, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So with a stock, on the other hand, maybe it's going to continue down and keep on going down. And you, since you don't have anything in mind what to do about it, you just let it go down.
Yeah,
down,
but you see, if you do go down that one-way street, you don't know if the stock's going to go back up and you invest more and you get more money. You get what I'm saying?
Right. But the point is that the chances are likely that the probability is that if you continue down that one-way street, the probability is that a car is going to end up smacking you right in the face.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
So the thing is that what we want to do, though, is we want to learn and maybe take the shortcut, which I think is the best idea here in terms of what we want to do is not expend extra time, energy, emotion, or risk in mm-hmm. the situation. So what would be the best thing, I think, would be to stop for a second, everything you're doing, look back at what the plan was, and get back on track. So if your plan was to take the stock down 7, 8, 9, 10%, 12%, whatever the stock limit you had on the downside, take that, take your mistake, the small amount of time, the small amount of money that you lost there, and not turn it into a bigger mistake and to a bigger loss. And in addition to that, if it does start turning up, you could always go back into the stock. Nobody said you can't go back into the stock, right? So the thing is that you want to do is you don't want to make the same mistake over and over and over. You don't want to keep taking the directions every single time you go to the same place, ending up lost, going down a one-way street, or in fact, wasting time. So what you could do is you could take these mistakes that you made and learn from them. Have a plan. And besides that, let's even back up even further. There's so many people out there that when they buy a stock, it's like when they go out in a car and don't have directions where they're going. If you don't have a map to where you're going, Brett, where are you going to get?
Nowhere.
You're going to go in circles unless you really know how you're going there. Mm-hmm. But if you never knew how to get there, if you don't know the plan, if you don't have a plan or a backup plan,
you're not going to get anywhere.
Going in circles, right? Same thing with a stock. When you buy a stock, you should know, okay, I'm buying the stock at $50 because right now it's surpassing a resistance point or it's breaking above its 50-day moving average or whatever else that you've actually said that you want to do. And then you then have a plan. If the stock moves back to its 50-day and holds on, I'm going to add to the position because of the strength there on volume. Or if it breaks through that, it breaks through its 200-day, et cetera, whatever it may be, down 8%, whatever the rule is that you set up, you then cut your losses and move ahead. It's called a plan. It's a discipline. It's a way that you need to function in the stock market or you're going to continue losing time and time again. And I'll tell you, we've made our share of mistakes. The latest one that I will tell you that we're beating ourselves up with is Lululemon. We talked about this over the year. We made some nice money in it in the earlier part of the year, into the mid part of the year. And then it started backing up on us. And you know what? We just had too much retail in the portfolio that we didn't add it back into our portfolio. And just this week, Lulu is at an all-time high after stellar earnings. Just amazing earnings. And the opportunity for them is still great. The question is, what do you do about it? So I think the driving lesson that we have and the idea that you want to make sure that you don't get lost along the way, because the way is very big. There's a lot of opportunity, a lot of ways for you to get lost in the markets. A lot of things that you can listen to, a lot of news, a lot of people trying to give you direction, like the pundits out there on CNBC or Bloomberg or wherever else it is. A lot of people trying to sell you newsletters. There's a lot of things that are coming in that you have to pay attention to. So it's almost like every street corner, there's someone pointing you in another direction.
Yeah.
So that may not be the best thing. Maybe it's because they want to move you into their parking lot so you can pay $10 for their services. You know, maybe they want to purposely get you lost. It's like anything else. Be careful from where the information comes. And remember that if you have a plan, you're going to do great. Quick lesson in the beginning here that I thought I'd bring my son in on and, you know, help out with that. So thanks a lot for that. I appreciate that.
No problem.
So we'll do it again soon?
Definitely.
Okay, good.
Maybe for episode 200. You never know.
That would be fun, wouldn't it? We got to do something special for episode 200. You know, I think that's good. And you know what? As a matter of fact, we're going to have a special episode coming up soon, which maybe you can help me with. We're going to try to get some great financial iPod and iPad and BlackBerry and Android apps out there so people can see what the best is to use. You know, I pretty much, you know, my everybody knows what I use, but I think we'll kind of do some analysis. Maybe we can get an iPad.
Maybe.
Oh, that'd be fun, huh? The new one's coming out, too. You saw that announcement?
No.
There's one coming out in, well, they said in January, February, the next version. So I don't know what they're going to have with that, but maybe they'll have some tethering issues, whatever. Anyway, so let's see. What else we want to talk about here? All right, so I want to talk about PIMCO and GDP for a minute. So it's interesting that Mohammed Al-Erian, who has been, coined the phrase the new normal, has been pretty negative on the U.S. economy and the fact that it's going to be very sluggish, came out with a update to their GDP, gross domestic product assumptions, and they actually raised it to about 3 to 3.5%. Now, that's about 1% higher than they had previously. Now, here's what's interesting about this. The question, why are they raising it? What is really the impetus for them to actually go out and raise their assumptions on GDP? It's all about the amount of stimulus that's coming into the market. The massive amount of stimulus, they said, between the Bernanke $600 billion QE2, as well as this new price-tagged $800-plus billion tax plan that, you know, is being presented and probably ratified by next week sometime, is so much stimulus in the U.S. economy that they're raising it by 1%. So that 1% is actually the equivalent to the stimulus that's being brought in. So what does that mean? Well, that means that two things. Number one, big inflows into emerging markets, but they're going to fight those tooth and nail, I'll tell you right now. And the current market trend looks like it's probably going to continue. The fact of the matter is that if you think about what happened with the recent market trend, it was, I mean, 180-degree turnaround once Bernanke came out with the $600 billion. You add onto that the other government stimulus plans. And once again, we are riding a wave of high liquidity that is given to us by the government. Now, also, if they decrease the payroll taxes by 2% for employees, what do you think that's going to do for the retail sector? What do you think that's going to do for consumer spending, consumer discretionary? So there is the opportunity right now for us to continue on this wave. You know, a couple of road bumps along the way, and, you know, we're going to have the China inflation issue get kind of buggy. We're going to see that Europe's going to be a problem. We're going to continue on the fact that Merkel from Germany said, you know what, we're not adding any money to the backstop here for Germany and France. No kidding. Why do they want to keep on pouring money down an empty pit that keeps on devouring it? So there are some bumps in the road, but I got to tell you something. The companies in the U.S. are looking better and better every single day. GE increased their dividend last week by 17%. We're seeing buybacks just continue to roll out. We're seeing balance sheets clean up in levels that you've never seen, as much cash on hand. We're seeing M&A activity continue on. I mean, we're really seeing a very nice U.S.-based balance sheet, with the exception of one glaring black eye that we have in our economy right now. And that's the employment situation at 9.8%, and it doesn't look like it's going down anytime soon. So a lot of people have asked continually, is it time to short the market? Is it time to short the market? There are no fundamental problems right now that are not being offset by stimulus and initiatives by the government so great that there's going to cause a systemic problem. In fact, I mentioned before that Bernanke, our question really, is he a clown? Is he bozo? Or is he brilliant? Well, this time, I guess it looks like he's brilliant. Let's take this for a second and think about this. You know, Bernanke comes in and he says that he wants to do the $600 billion quantitative easing in order to stimulate the employment market and also bring down housing costs in terms of mortgages. Now, what happened? Well, he went after the mid part of the yield curve. He went after the, we'll just use the 7 through 15-year treasuries and started buying them and buying them. And all of a sudden, something happened. The yield curve got steep. In other words, the early part of the yield curve, right, the 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 5 year, you know, was kind of staying flat to down. He was pressing down on the mid part and all of a sudden popping the long term, long end. What does that mean? Well, that means that mortgages got more expensive, and that's not what he said he wanted to do. And borrowing costs got more expensive. Well, that's not what he said he wanted to do either. So what do we got? We have a yield curve that is on a steep incline, and who is that good for? Let's think about that for a second. Who is that good for? Who would benefit with the long part of the yield curve, the loan part that is higher than the early part of the yield curve? Oh, I got it. The banks, of course. The banks. You put money into the CD, into a money market, into a savings account, and you get like less than 1% at best, if not 0.01%. And you borrow at 3, 4, 5% and increasing. So Bernanke with the Fed, who of course we know is backed by the banks, is doing what? Well, brilliantly, he's saying one thing, saying that we really want to help to make sure that borrowing costs are down to enable borrowers of homes and the home market to stabilize, people to borrow money to help them with their needs, create more loans from the banks, which they will, of course, because now there's a greater degree of safety and a greater margin of liquidity available that they can actually loan money out. In other words, the range, the amount of money they take in, what they pay out on, and the amount of money they lend out, what they take in on. It's a brilliant, brilliant plan to help recapitalize the banks. That's why we're seeing this dramatic move over the last week or so that is a rotation from things like materials and some staples into the financials. Have you noticed that? Bank of America's been on a tear. Citi's been on a tear. A lot of the banks in general have been on a tear. But the banks that do the lending, not just the market making and investing, the lending banks have been doing terrific. Now, there's something else here. Well, if rates are going up on the long end, and that's related to mortgages, et cetera, and mortgage rates go up, what are people probably going to do? The probability is they're going to run out and try to, at their best, close deals as soon as possible, lock in rates, or at least, if nothing else, if they've been sitting on the sidelines waiting for rates to come down, they realize they just got punched in the face. They just realized that, you know what? There's no longer any time to wait. They can't wait anymore because rates have gone up, and who knows where they're going to go from here. If the economy is stabilizing, if all of a sudden inflation is ticking up, bonds are going to move prices are going to also move lower. And in fact, yields are going to move up. That's what's going to happen. So, you know, when we look at this environment that Bernanke has set up, again, I think it was the greatest magic trick that was done in a long time. So we may see housing stabilize, but at the cost of homeowners. We'll see the banking balance sheets get better at the cost of borrowers. And the Fed created inflation by pounding on the center part of the Treasury curve and then bulging the long end and killing the dollar to help exports. Brilliant plan. Even though a lot of economists think it's, well, stupid. On the surface, it is stupid because it doesn't create jobs. It doesn't help homeowners. It doesn't do anything more than kill the dollar unless you realize that what he said is not really what he intended to do. Take a look at that. Think about that for a second, and I think you'll find some interest in there. And hopefully some of these economists that just listen to what Bernanke says, not what he does and the outcome, will come to the realization that there is some benefit here. And I think it's a little excessive, and I think that the potential for inflation is very high, and it's a very dangerous plan. But I think that you know, you got to give him some credit. If this is really what he was looking to do, he did a great job. On the other hand, if it's not what he intended to do, it was inadvertent. Well, okay, he's stupid for what he did, but the end product worked out pretty nicely. So China inflation has been in the headline, popping over 5% and causing some problems. Even though the housing prices had its lowest rise in, I think, 12 months, they're still requiring the banks in China to have higher levels of reserves to make sure that they don't have any problems with their loans. The fact of the matter is that the China area is on fire. Of course, we know this. The economy is just grooving and moving and helped by extraordinary exports to the U.S. The U.S. exports were great, too, during this last quarter. So the inflation situation in China is not getting any better. It's based on food inflation and, of course, energy inflation as the key points of what's happening. The price of food over there has just been skyrocketing. And we saw that recently with McDonald's even increasing their prices there. So this will affect the world because China is going to actually, I think, probably come up with some tools to continue to contract the economy. But realize something, that at this point, some of the things that are being done are now outside of just China because the stimulus package that's being put in the U.S. is going to help us here. The weakest link of all this continues to be Europe, and we continue to be short Europe. We continue to believe that the inability for them to get themselves out of the problem to stimulate their economy is going to continue to contract the entire region with the exception of Germany. And that's been happening. Industrial production in Italy and in France and in the surrounding countries has been awful. Let's not even talk about Greece and Italy and the situations there and Portugal, what's probably going on as well next. So I think that, you know, generally speaking, the U.S. is in much better shape. And let's also remember something else, that by Bernanke dropping the dollar down so significantly, it's created the ability for foreigners that don't have dollars, right, that are trading in other currencies, to come here and buy our goods on the cheap. You just go to the malls and really maybe do a little bit of a survey on your own. Hey, where are you from? Where are you getting your money from? And I bet you a lot of the money that's being spent these days is from foreigners who are really doing a good job at picking up things here. All right, so I mentioned the sector rotation, of course. The financials are really getting a real big move here and starting to move on to a nice trend higher, although it still is a long, long-term downtrend that they're on at this point. So I think that, you know, we have to be careful with that, but I think that the reality is that things are looking a bit better, and if nothing else, not by their own doing, but by the fact that the government has, you know, everything in their power that they're doing to just push every bit of money they can into the banking system. Current market trend clearly up right now. We'll see how it goes. Volume has been terrible of late. Just awful. I don't know if people are on vacation, there's just apathy. I guess apathy, because you see the VIX in the 17s and change. I mean, it's just this complacency and this, you know, I guess in a way you could say we're setting up for some kind of a real disappointment moving forward with everybody so bullish and just thinking everything's so great, VIX being in a complacency zone, volume being just nothing. And I guess we have to be aware of some of the things happening there. Be careful to watch the hedging in your portfolio. All right, let's see what else I got on my list here. Yep. I want to talk about the IBD, Investor's Business Daily. You know, I love that newspaper. Great stuff in there. The Investor Business Daily has a home study course that I asked them to send me, and there's two parts of it. There's a part one, which is the basic, and there's a part two, which is the more advanced. They go through all the different things, like they have their canned slim, and they have their various things like their double bottom and their technical analysis patterns, if you will, for example. So they have a double bottom buy point. They have a 3-week, 4-week tight pattern, all these different patterns they talk about. They talk about technical analysis and fundamental analysis. You know what I like about this? It's kind of similar in an interesting way to the way that we do things with our Quanta Funda Tecna process here at Horowitz & Company, where we look at the quantitative and do some screening to come up with some great ideas for stocks. Look at the fundamentals and look under the hood. Okay, what is the stock doing? What is it worth? Do the fundamentals make sense? Do the growth story make sense? Is it going to continue? And then looking at the technicals for buy points and sell points. Not exactly the same, of course, but they have a lot of that available with this tool. And I think if you're looking to learn, it's not the cheapest thing in the world. I think it's like $300 for part one, maybe $250 for the part one, and maybe $700 for the part two. It's on DVD. They give you a book. They walk you through it. I got to tell you something. if you want to learn and be guided through some real basic but fundamentally important ways to invest money, this is a great tool to have. I haven't really seen one like this that I liked as much as this. Really goes through all of it and then really covers the whole idea of when are you going to buy in a market rally, in a market downturn, when's the best time to add the positions. Good stuff in here. Really, really good stuff. So, you know my thinking on this, by the way. You know, you're not going to get into the investment business in terms of your own personal account for free. You can't just live off Yahoo Finance, MSN Money, and Google Finance for free to get the best news. You can't do it. You can't ignore the fact that you need to continually learn and buy books and do things like this home study course and buy advanced services such as a trade station or, for example, looking at a Reuters service or you know something that can give you more information than the next guy. Because information is not only knowledge and power, but it's profit. If you get information that's 2 days too late, a day too late, an hour too late in this business, you know what? You're the last guy in. Because the guy that got the information at 1 minute after it came out is probably an hour and a half behind the last guy. Remember something, that you need to have information that's clean, reliable. It's also going to be accessible and actionable when you come to investing. I think it's really important. So, you know, this year, maybe make a New Year's resolution that you're going to do a little bit more to learn a little bit more. And maybe it's going to hurt a little bit more. And you want to make sure that you just don't jump in. Learn before you actually put dollar one in. We call that paper trading. Make sure that you get your mistakes as best as possible behind you. Learn what you should be doing before you have the big bucks in. The game of poker. You're not just going to go into a $1 million game if you never played before, hoping that you get good cards, hoping that, you know, you read a quick Hoyle's book on how to play poker and that's it. A lot more to the game, a lot more to the investment game than that. Okay, so we'll have more about that, though, with Scott O'Neill. He's coming on next week. We have Frank Curzio also going to wrap up the year with a show on all things to look for 2011 in a couple of weeks. Kevin Hoffman is coming on as well. We're going to talk about some of the keys to finding some great stocks and a few other little biddies we're going to talk about with him as well in the next couple of weeks. So lots of things planned for the end of the year. And I want to make sure that you know that, of course, we're going to answer your questions throughout the end of the year. You can just write me to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. I got a lot of good mail lately, and the mail was kind of interesting things, a lot of long emails from people lately. I guess people are enjoying the whole process of writing and discussing things with me. We got a great email. I want to thank, who is this? Thomas, let me see his last name. Do I have it here? Mike Thomas, thank you for the information that you sent me on the whole thing about Bernanke and with his challenges. Great email talking about the 8 or 9 different challenges that Bernanke has over the next year. He went into this whole discussion about the Fed is, you know, doing everything they can to keep rates low and the mortgage fiasco and the 401ks and all those other things they talked about. Good stuff. Thank you for that information. I also want to thank, let's see here. Looking a little further here. Jerome, thank you very much for your email. Talk to me about his discussion about he works in the bread business and they're increasing prices about a month and a half ago. None of the other companies did so at the time, but just a week after another bread company and a chip company both did raise their prices, trying to push prices into the consumer marketplace. So really good discussion about that. He asked me about having Jim Rogers on again. I actually talked with Jim Rogers this week. He's going to be on there. I think he was talking about, Jerome was talking about biflation. And yeah, Jerome, we're going to have Jim Rogers on. We confirmed him. Actually, you know who else we're having on? We're having on Mr. Griffin. Remember him? He talked about the Fed and the creature from Jekyll Island, which is that fabulous book all about the Fed and how the Fed was actually created. And we're going to talk about that and have him on as well. I think that's going to be the second week of the new year. So lots of good stuff happening, lots of things that you need to look forward to. So I'm very pleased about that. I wanted to also mention to you that probably by the time you listen to this or very close to it, you're going to start hearing a lot more about the Winning Investor Quick and Dirty Tips Guide for Winning Investment Processes. It's a book that I just wrote coming out on December 21st. I really haven't announced it much because we want to get the exact date, but it's available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kindle, Nook, Google eBook, iBooks, whatever it is, from Apple. You can go to the stores, you'll have it. Should have it by the end of the year. Clearly available at Amazon.com. A lot of people said that The Disciplined Investor was a great book, but you know what? They want to learn even more basic information. They want to know a kind of a version that is really for the novice, for those people that are entering into the investment game, learning about the very basic tenets, and then take it to the next step. So what we did was McMillan approached me and they asked me to put something together. And I spent the last, 8 months, 9 months putting this together, writing it, editing it, writing it, editing it, writing it. And you know how that goes. It's a tough process, but it's available. And I encourage you, as a great gift for the holidays, to put this on your list. It's called The Winning Investor. Just go on to Amazon.com or look up my name. It's available for sale. I think it's like $12 or $10. It's about a 250-page book, very basic. But you know what? For someone that you want to give the gift of financial independence, this is the thing to do. And I encourage you to do me a favor. We want to get those book sales up so that we can, if nothing else, rack it up to a New York Times bestseller. Will that happen? I don't know. But you know what? We can try. All of you who have been listening to me for a while, I'd really appreciate your support in this. And do yourself a favor. Tell some friends about it. Make a little quick Facebook note about them. Put the little I like thing or whatever goes on Facebook. And spread the word. Spread the cheer. Spread the financial independence. Spread the wealth. The Winning Investor, available in bookstores. All right, couple things. Hold on a second. I got to get these because you're going to want to hear about some of these stocks I want to talk about for a second. Okay. All right. I got the list in front of me. All right. So we've been looking at a lot of different stocks lately that meet some very, very important criteria. We always look at stocks that are rated highly, of course, through our system. And we use, the fundamental and technicals, et cetera. We have a pretty cool way that we've been developing. I don't want to say to automate it, but to give us a much better and clearer view of what's going inside of a company. We've been working on this with Kevin and a few people for the last year or so, and really think we got it together. As a matter of fact, if you've ever seen any of what we call our one sheets, you'll notice that we have a score, and it combines a technical and a fundamental score. And we came across the idea that, you know what, let's look at a variety of stocks that we always do. But I thought, what the heck? Let's take the same criteria that we use to find great opportunities for growth stocks that we usually have a $10 minimum for. Okay, we want to have stocks that are worth over $10. And let's move that down to under $10, but we want to have some volume. We don't want to have a stock that's just trading at, 25 cents with no volume. We don't want to have none of that. We want to have quality stocks, so you can't have just a junk, penny stock going on here. We want to have good return on equity. We want to have a stock that has great EPS growth. We want to see that it has long-term growth over growth on a five-year average, if it's possible, on a one-year over one-year basis. We want to see that our M score, which is our momentum score, is in the top of all stocks out there. We want to see some management ownership. We want to see a little high short interest just to kind of give us the ability to maybe enter into a little short squeeze if that happens, and that benefits us on the long side. And let's find stocks that are priced well, all this together. And finally, those that have some great upside opportunity. Now, what ended up happening was we got, not a gigantic list, but we probably got a dozen or so stocks that fit many of those parameters. One of them, though, actually two of them, but one of them floated way up to the top. As a matter of fact, what I found very interesting about it was it scored a perfect 10. In the last year, I've never seen a perfect 10, especially as stocks started rolling over and we saw the markets take the wind out of the sails of a lot of fundamentals, a lot of the technicals. Never saw a stock score a perfect 10 in the last 3 years. No Priceline and Amazon and, Netflix. Nope, they don't score 10s. That doesn't mean they're going to not make you a fortune, but they didn't score 10s. I'm like, what is going on? Why all of a sudden is this stock scoring a 10? So we looked a little further into this. And by golly, it had the trend was right technically. It had all the signals from volume pressure to M score average daily volumes, moving ahead of its 50-day on top of its 200-day. We saw the stochastics turning up, or saw the short-term trend and our bull trends moving up. We saw that volume was picking up, moving beyond the 50-day average volume on a fundamental basis. We saw that it had no debt. Return on equity was 65. PEG was below 1. We saw that the revenue quarter growth on growth, quarterly growth quarter of quarter is 140% and looking good from an estimate standpoint. We saw its one-year EPS growth at 90%. We saw that the stock had just terrific expectations in the future. I mean, all things were working right with this. So what's the story? What is this stock and what do they do, right? That's what I was thinking. It's also closely held, which was kind of good. We like management to hold that. Also, we saw that mutual funds were adding to that. Institutions were adding to that. So, wow, all these things lined up. Do we have a mistake? Seriously. You know, is there something wrong with this or what is this? So we took a look at it. I actually spoke to the company, wrote a report on this, and think there's some opportunity. Now, mind you, since it's under $10, you know, it's going to have some volatility. That's just the way it goes. You can move these stocks around a lot. The volume on average, you know, even though it's you know, reasonable, it's still not one of those companies that's inside of the S&P 500, let's say. It's only less than, it's a little less than a $200 million company. So, you know, you're going to see that it is going to score well, but then we have to question, you know, how much volatility we want to take on this. Now, before you pass out from the anticipation of this, me not giving you the symbol, let me just give it to you and tell you what they do. The symbol of the company is ZAG, Z-A-G-G. Actually, the name of the company is ZAG also. Z as in zebra, A-G-G. Now, I want you to do some research on this. I want you to take a look at the stock and tell me what you think. Now, I talked to some of my colleagues about this. There was some concern about the low amount of assets or cash on hand. And there was a few other things here and there that were minor. I approached the company. I talked about that. I was concerned about the inventory buildup. There was some major inventory that built up last quarter. I talked to the company about that. And you know what? They made me feel pretty solid about the rationale and reasoning about that. And we put a report together. I'll put a link on this podcast to it. I want you to see what we did. We picked it up earlier in the week, a small position for our portfolios for our clients over at the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy. And what we did was we started off small to see how it plays. And if it plays with us, well, maybe we'll add some to it. Well, already we're up close to about, I think, 9% in the last three trading sessions since we added to it. And then, lo and behold, just right after we initiated, actually, another company, a major boutique, came out with a buy recommendation on it. Now you see the volume is starting to pick up. So now all of a sudden you're getting some notice out there from some, whether it's institutional levels or advisors. You're getting some interesting readings off of the stock movement from a volume standpoint, as well as the fact that it just hit an all-time high. So when you look at this company, look at what it had. It had a chart pattern that was starting to perk up after a little bit of a lag down with limited volume on the sell-off. You see that it is starting to peak out past its all-time high, which is going to start squeezing the shorts. You know about that. And you have great fundamentals, albeit a couple of questions in there, and you want to make sure you have it. But for a small cap that's really in the distribution and marketing business, they don't need a lot of cash on hand. So we found they had a nice line of credit behind it, et cetera, in case, although they didn't use it. So when you look at something like this, we said, you know what, we're going to take a little piece of it. Well, you know, how wrong could we be? Well, we could be very wrong if all of a sudden they start selling it. But, of course, we could sell it if we want to. In a small position in a portfolio, these kind of plays are okay. So what we're going to do probably next couple of weeks is we'll put out some posts on some of these, you know, stocks under 10, just for some ideas that may be some great opportunities. Again, we have about 10 or 12 of them, probably about 3 or 4 that hit my eye that I think are interesting. But we'll put that out there as well. And I think that those that like, there's, I think some people like to buy cheaper stocks, you know, stocks that are less costly, which I can understand that. But, you know, that's not always the play. Sometimes the greatest stocks are the most expensive. They keep on moving up and up and up. And you know what? You may say, well, I can only buy one share or two shares. Well, 8% is 8% if it's a $1 stock or if it's $200 stock. The percent gain is the same, right? 8% on your money. So think of it that way. So the other couple of things I want to mention to you is that, you know, we need to be aware that it looks like the consumer area is still doing pretty well. We like our Coach position that we are holding that we like. Acme Packet in the technology area. We just went short leg Mason. We put a report on why we did so, and it was a great thing that happened because the next day out came a report that showed their assets under management were significantly lower than expected. So we actually did well on that, and the stock moved down, and that's going to hurt them. And as people pull money out of fixed income, because they have about 75% of their assets in fixed income that they're holding, it's going to be problematic for them as well. We still like our raw stores in that area of consumer discretionary. I was mentioning earlier to you, Home Depot has really been doing very well of late. That was new additions to the portfolio as well in the last 3 or 4 weeks. Holding a nice position in Baidu. Brigham, BEXP, has been fantastic and really just amazing for us. We added Alexion Pharmaceuticals recently on the DH Unplugged show. If you listen to that, ALXN, we mentioned that as a potential area that could do very well. And we recently added to that. So that's a little taste of some of the things that we've done. That's just a small portion of some of the things we've done over the last number of weeks. A lot of those things were mentioned on DH Unplugged. But take a look at Zag from an educational standpoint. I'm not recommending that you buy it or sell it or do anything with it. But look at some of the reasons why it rated very well. Look at some of the fundamental reasons and look at some of the technical reasons. And like I said, we'll put a link to the actual report we did that shows you not only the rationale and why we bought it, some of the things the company said, some of the areas that other people had talked about, but also our one sheet that gives us a little better insight into the company's fundamentals and technicals and ranks it for us. Tell me what you think about that. And by the way, I didn't tell you what the company did I? They do something very simple. They make the InvisiShield, which is the coating for the iPhone, the BlackBerry, the Android phones. That's that protective coating that covers it. They also make a full line, I should say distribute a full line of covers. They have a really cool cover for the iPad, which has a built-in Bluetooth keyboard. They also have an amazing line of leather products for your various mobile devices. And they have a patent on a process that makes your phone or your computer totally waterproof. You can watch the video that I put up there as well. It's pretty cool. They're not distributing that just yet. They bought a company, the majority of company, and retained the worldwide distribution rights, exclusive distribution rights for the waterproofing of devices, which, you think about that, that could do a lot of interesting things for us in the future. Could it be used at the manufacturing facility? Could they have kiosks? Could it be used at home? Really interesting process that they have. HZO is called the process. So take a look at that. I think that you'll find that interesting. And of course, with the growth of the mobile phone market, with the growth of the mobile device market, and we want to protect those amazing screens, we want to protect the device, well, it makes sense that this goes hand in hand with something like that. Again, you know, there's a lot of other companies that do this kind of thing, but they're really taking the lead in this area. And that's what we always like to find, the leaders in the area. So anyway, keep that in mind. We're going to end it here. We have lots more to talk about over the holidays. I hope you do join me on The Winning Investor. Pick up the book, listen to the podcast, DH Unplugged. Lots of great guests coming up. I want to thank my son Brett for giving us a little hand here, talking about some of the things that we want to make sure we do on our way to investment success. And I hope that if you are looking for an advisor because you're totally lost out there and your directions are just lousy, let us be your little GPS. At Horowitz Company, we run the TDI Managed Growth Strategy. It's a trading, aggressive trading account, $50,000 minimum. We also have our global allocations, more traditional, $500,000 minimum. There's a video on the website, The Disciplined Investor, that tells you all about this. It's the time that if you're sitting on the fence, now is the time to do something. We have full transparency, tell you what we do all the time. You have your own individual account. You don't have to worry about it being commingled. Good stuff. I've told you about that before. Now may be the time before 2011 starts. Until next time. We'll see you soon. Thanks for joining me on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.